Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the classic game books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. As you know, if you're a regular listener, we are in a brief interlude between Season 1, in which I discussed the 1977 Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition Monster Manual, and Season 2, where I come to the difficult second album, 1981's Fiend Folio. But this is a special episode of Monster Man, and it is special because it was requested by one of my Patreon backers. If you subscribe at the $5 or higher level, you get the opportunity to request a special episode all about a monster of your choice. And I'm not sure that we would really call what I'm talking about today a monster, but that's the kind of VIP treatment you get when you're a Monster Man Patreon. So thank you to Jason Connerly for sponsoring this episode. Now, as I said, this is a little bit of an unusual one because we are not discussing a creature from the Monster Manual. Actually, we've had a few of those, but this is our first creature from Deities and Demigods. Deities and Demigods is the 1980 supplement that discussed, you know, religion and mythology in Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, and in episode 13 of my bonus show, Patron Deities, which is a podcast that I do for my Patreon subscribers, I talked about Valkyries. And, I spent a few minutes talking about them there, and I'm going to briefly recap that in this episode and then go on for a little further discussion. And Jason requested a full-length episode on Valkyries. I guess he liked the short part that was in episode 13. So let's get started. Okay, to begin with, the Deities and Demigods book basically presents Valkyries as sort of angels, right? Supernatural servants of Odin who ride around, and specifically what they are is choosers of the slain. Val has a root meaning slain, same root word as Valhalla, or one of Odin's titles, which is Valfather, father of the slain. But as I mentioned in the episode of Patron Deities, if we look at Old Norse poetry, what we actually see is that Valkyries are a little more complicated than that. They don't necessarily seem to be wholly supernatural creatures. That is to say that they definitely have a supernatural element, but they're also humans. And I pointed out examples from Old Norse poetry that illustrated that Valkyries were human women who were living human lives and also riding off as Valkyries to, you know, carry out Odin's tasks, to determine who was supposed to succeed in battle and who was supposed to die. And I suggested that the boundaries between Valkyries and certain other kinds of supernatural female beings in Norse mythology were not really very clear. For example, we know that the youngest of the Norns, Skuld, who is the Norn of the future, her name means shall be or shall, is described as a Valkyrie, is described as carrying a shield, in a list of Valkyries in the poem Völuspá. So we have there a Valkyrie who is absolutely a Norn, you know, a supernatural being, but who is also a Valkyrie. And actually, not to get sidetracked, but we know the Norns are sometimes, there's a poem that says that the Norns, you know, some of them are humans, some of them are elves, some of them are dwarves. So the Norns also don't seem to be supernatural in terms of their origin, although obviously they have supernatural powers and a supernatural cosmological role. So this is just one of the many examples we've seen of the idea that in Norse mythology, even though there's this sort of more or less clearly delineated cosmology, the boundaries between the worlds of humanity and the worlds of the supernatural are permeable. And Valkyries almost seem, in a lot of the poetry, to be kind of like superheroes. You know, they have a mortal identity, and then, which is their real identity, they really are those people. And then when, you know, Odin needs something done, he sends out the call, and the Valkyries mount up and ride out. In fact, it just occurred to me that kind of it's a magical girl transformation kind of situation. Like, they're a little bit like Sailor Moon, you know. If everybody knew who Sailor Moon was, I mean, it doesn't ever seem to be a secret that someone is a Valkyrie. But they're not necessarily Valkyries all the time, I guess. There's certainly, there's a description of Svava, who's a Valkyrie, hearing that her lover is in trouble, and she and her Valkyries ride out. So there seems to be this idea that, you know, she's not flying around determining who is and isn't going to be slain all the time. Some of the time she's just staying at home with her father. I mean, we see Valkyries who get married, but they don't seem necessarily to be able to keep those relationships stable. So, for example, in Völundarkvida, Völund and his two brothers all marry Valkyries, and they live happily together for 7 years, and then in the 8th year, the Valkyries are longing to go, and in the 9th year, they leave. So there does seem to be this idea of, you know, wanting to be off about their divine business, and it doesn't seem necessarily that they are being, you know, imprisoned. It just seems that they're, you know, they're happy to be there, but gradually they become restless. And I thought we would start today by taking a look at a few other passages from Old Norse poetry that relate to Valkyries, and looking at some of the different roles that Valkyries play. Because we're used to thinking of Valkyries as these women who fly down and they choose the slain, and their fundamental conflict is always going to be basically the conflict that appears in the opera Die Valkyrie. And that is that the Valkyrie is a person, and she has, you know, it's the feelings and opinions just like any other person. So Odin tells her to go down and hand the victory to a particular fighter who, whether or not he is the greater fighter, Odin's plans require him to win, right? Odin is always playing the long game. And the Valkyrie looks down and goes, no, that guy is unworthy of victory. You know, because we certainly get the impression that they're these proud warriors, right? And so it sort of bothers them, the idea of giving victory to an inferior warrior, right? They admire courage and skill, and they want to see it rewarded. Or, as we saw in the poem Sigurdrifumal, in that episode of Patron Deities, because they feel sorry for the underdog. Sigurdrifa gave the victory to, what's his name? Anyway, the guy who was fighting Hjalmgunnar, not because he was the strongest fighter, but because nobody was helping him, and so she felt that she had to. So we tend to think that the Valkyrie, that's all that they do, but they seem to play a number of other roles. Sometimes they're just out there being warriors. They're often referred to as war maidens, specifically war maidens in helmets. They're almost, not almost always, but they're frequently described with reference to their helmets. So there's some, maybe that's just because it's, you know, oh, a woman in a helmet, that's weird. But maybe also there's some other significance to that. So yeah, let's take a look at some other examples of Old Norse poetry that relate to Valkyries and see if we can find some other things that they do. Now, I'm going to quote two texts here. The first is the Elder Edda. This is a medieval collection of Old Norse poems. And this translation is by Andy Orchard. And the other text that I'm going to be reading from is the Icelandic saga Njalsaga. And this translation is by Magnus Magnusson and Herman Paulsson. And I don't know if it's an old translation necessarily. I don't know if it's the current one, but it's in Penguin Classics. And it's the version of the saga that I grew up with, so I'm very attached to it. So Valkyries appear in quite a lot of Old Norse poetry. And that's possibly because they're a popular motif. And it's also possibly just because there are a lot of Old Norse poems that fundamentally tell similar stories. The one about a mortal who falls in love with a Valkyrie, or a demigod who falls in love with a Valkyrie, and she becomes his protector, but ultimately he's betrayed and killed, and then she mourns for him. And that's, I mean, obviously, if you're familiar at all with kind of popular reinterpretations of Norse mythology, that's the story of Brunhilde and Siegfried in the Ring cycle. But it's also the story of the two Helgis, Helgi Hundingsbane and Helgi Hjorvardsson, who are these heroes who are said to be reincarnations of each other, and who both fall in love with the Valkyrie. Sigrun in one case and Svava in the other, and I may have those backwards because the protagonists are both called Helgi. And that's all tied into the story of the Volsungs as well. You're not going to be able to make a single consistent story out of the heroic poems of the Elder Edda. They often tell different versions of the same tale, or have stories that include similar or the same characters, and, you know, it's legend, and it's best not to worry about it. But I thought I'd start with some lists of Valkyrie names from the Poetic Edda. There are lots of poems in the Poetic Edda that are basically like tests of poetic knowledge, and so they include, tell me the names of a bunch of Valkyries and things like that. And Andy Orchard has done this thing where he's taken the Old Norse names that they're given and translated them into their English meanings. So, for example, a lot of Old Norse names have literal meanings, and those are meant to kind of tell you something either about that person's description or about their character. So, for example, in Njalsaga, there's a character called Kolskegg, and skeg just means beard, and kol means coal, but they use it to mean black. So Kolskegg literally means black beard. And Eyjolf Skallagrimsson's father in Eyjolf Saga, his name's Skallagrim, Grimm is his name, which means mask, I think, and Skala means bald. So his name is Bald Grimm. And his father, I think, was called Kveldulf, which means night wolf, which should tell you something. So Orchard has gone and translated these Valkyrie names into their literal meanings. So in the Voluspa, six of them are listed. Skuld, who's translated as shall be, and then Brandisher, Shield Brandisher, Battle, War, and Wand Maid. And wand could mean, you know, spear or sword. Then there are 13 given in the poem Grimnismal, and they're called Wielder, Mist, Brandisher, War, Axe Age, Strength, Clash, Smash, Spear Waver, Shield Truce, Council Truce, Power Trace, and there's one other, War Bonds. And in Grimnismal, it says that they bring the Einherjar ale. And the Einherjar are the dead warriors who live in Valhalla. They're Odin's army. Now, this sounds like they're kind of servants. And there's a lot of Viking Age art that shows a rider arriving at a hall and being greeted with a drink by an elaborately dressed woman. And some have said that this is, you know, this is the dead person arriving at Valhalla to be given ale by a Valkyrie. And to us, this seems a little strange, right? The idea that these powerful women are, you know, are they waitresses? They're sort of serving the drinks. But of course, if you think like of Beowulf, where there's this scene where drinks are being served out, but it's by the queen. Because what she's doing is she's taking the status of the host, right? She's welcoming people into the hall, which is actually like a sign of status and generosity. So I think they are, I mean, they're servants, but servants in a context where to be a servant of the king of the gods is a distinct privilege, and where serving ale to these warriors doesn't necessarily imply an inferior status to them. You know, it's a host welcoming a guest, not a waiter bringing a drink to your table. And so here are a few more descriptions of Valkyries from other poems. So I mentioned Völundarkvida. This is the story of Völund the Smith, better known in English as Wayland Smith. And he says that there are these three Valkyries and that they have swan cloaks. So we sort of assume that they fly with magic horses. It's often said that Valkyries ride over sea and sky. But here it seems to be that they have bird cloaks, which allow them to take on bird shapes, a motif that appears elsewhere in Norse mythology. Helgakvida Hundingsbane in Fyri, the early song of Helgi Hundingsbane, has a Sigrun the Valkyrie, and she's a mortal woman, and she's upset that her father has engaged her to a man that she doesn't respect, someone that she calls a king as courageous as a kitten. And she basically encourages Helgi to go and kill this guy so that she'll be able to marry him instead. And once Helgi starts off on this quest, she basically functions as his sort of guardian angel. Specifically, she protects him from a shipwreck. And the Valkyrie protecting someone from a shipwreck is something that we're going to see in several other examples of Norse poetry. As you can imagine, shipwreck was a very real concern for people in the Viking Age. And what's interesting is there's a passage in this poem where Sinfjotli, a leader in Helgi's army, gets into an insult contest with a guy called Gudmund. And that's pretty common in Old Norse poetry and in medieval Icelandic sagas, this idea of exchanging insults. But Sinfjotli calls Gudmund a Valkyrie at one point. I mean, he's taunting him with the idea that he's a woman, transgressing gender norms. It was a big insult in early medieval Scandinavian society, but it's interesting to see that here, that he seems to use it as synonymous with a sorceress. He says you were a witch and a Valkyrie, which is very different from the heroic characterization of the Valkyrie that appears in the same poem. So it's not just that Valkyries are heroic warrior women, they also seem to be kind of like witches, and I'll show you an example later on that supports that. In Helgakvida Hjorvardssonar, the song of Helgi Hjorvardsson, again, we have the Valkyrie who falls in love with Helgi, different Helgi, but they're reincarnations, or no, they're going to be reincarnated as Helgi Hundingsbane, sorry, Helgi Hjorvardsson is chronologically earlier, not that it matters. And again, she saves him from a shipwreck. And here, the shipwreck is caused by magic. So it's a troll who's trying to cause the ships to wreck. And the Valkyrie intervenes and prevents it. And someone says, you know, oh yeah, your ship sort of wrecked except for this woman who led you safely to shore. So also, Helgi Hjorvardsson winds up in kind of a love triangle over Svava, but nothing really comes of it. His brother is enchanted by a troll woman who's riding a wolf using snakes for reins, which is a pretty great image. He's enchanted by her so that he makes a promise, like a vow, that he will marry Svava, even though she's already in love with Helgi. And he goes and tells Helgi about that, and Helgi says, oh, that's okay, I think I'm going to die, so when I die, you and Svava should get married. And that's actually the last thing that Helgi says to Svava. He's like, well, you know, now that I'm gone, you know, you should, you know, be happy, and you should live a life, and you should marry my brother. And she turns up with 27 Valkyries at one point. There does seem to be a thing where Valkyries sometimes show up in multiples of 9. Helgi sees 9 Valkyries earlier in the poem. In the later song of Helgi Hundingsbane, there's another family conflict, which is that Helgi has to fight Sigrun's family. He kills some of her brothers, and in return, one of her brothers kills him, and Sigrun places a curse on her brother for doing so. And Dag, Sigrun's brother, has killed Helgi, and he killed him using Odin's own spear. So Odin wanted Helgi to die, so he lent Dag his spear. And Sigrun says, may all those oaths bring you to grief that you and Helgi have sworn by the shining water of lightning and the wet, cold stone of water. May that ship not slip onwards that slips under you, though the wished-for wind lies behind. May that horse not run onwards that runs under you, though your enemy is hot on your tail. May your sword not bite that you brandish, unless it's whistling above your own head. Helgi's death should be avenged on you, though you were a wolf out in the woods, lacking wealth and every delight, without food, but what you guzzle from corpses. And Dag responds, you're insane, sister, and out of your wits to call down such harm on your brother. Odin alone caused all the evil, for he bore strife runes among princes. Your brother offers you red gold rings, all of Andilsvay and Slaughterdale's, ring-adorned woman, have half our homeland, to repay the harm done to you and your boys. And then, you know, she's not having it. But don't worry, when Helgi gets to Valhalla, Odin talks about what a great guy he is and invites him to rule alongside him. So here, again, we have a conflict that the Valkyrie is involved in that's about her mortal family, right? It's the conflict between her husband and her brothers, which is a pretty common conflict in, not just in Old Norse literature, but in kind of heroic literature generally. So we see that the Valkyries, although they are supernatural creatures, although they have superhuman powers, are not outside of the normal pattern of feuding and revenge and so on. They seem to be quite firmly inside it. And that's why I said, and I continue to say, that Valkyries actually work well as player characters, because unlike most things in the Deities and Demigods book, they do the kinds of things that player characters do. And you can see that they would work in this kind of mission-based structure. Odin seems to give them assignments, and they seem to be like living their normal lives, going around being paladins, you know, fighting for their kings and who are usually their fathers, right? They're often princesses. You know, they're these princesses who go around, you know, riding their magic horses, wielding spears, etc., etc. And then every so often, like the light flashes, and Odin goes, "All right, I've got a job for you." And sometimes that job is pretty unsavory. Sometimes the job is to bring down the better man in a battle, because Odin needs the best warriors in the world to be his Einherjar, his army who will fight for him in Valhalla. So he arranges for the actually braver, stronger fighter to die so that he can come to the afterlife and be one of Odin's champions, which is good news for Odin, but bad news for the guy who dies. And we can see this motif reappear in most pop culture versions of the Valkyries, right? So the obvious example would be Wagner's Ring Cycle, which I mentioned earlier, where Brunhild, who is based on a character who was only sometimes a Valkyrie. There are quite a lot of versions of the story of Siegfried or Sigurd and Brunhild in which she's just, you know, a princess or a queen. But there, you know, again, Odin sends Brunhild to kill Sigmund, and she doesn't want to do it, you know, to give the victory to whoever the guy's fighting. Hunding, is that right? I'm not as up on my Wagner as I should be. Anyway, she refuses. Odin turns up and shatters Sigmund's sword, and then, after the fight is over and Sigmund is dead, kills the guy who killed him anyway. Or Wotan, I guess I should say. It's Wotan in the Ring Cycle rather than Odin. Although, I mean, same guy, basically. So that conflict between what Odin wants you to do and your own sense of honor would be one of the motivating conflicts for a Valkyrie player character. Now, obviously, you know, with a flying horse and a magic spear and a direct pipeline of the gods, you've got a game balance problem. So a Valkyrie in the sense of a paladin of Odin in an Old Norse-inspired campaign is maybe some kind of high-level thing, right? Like, you know, your ordinary paladins of Odin are just shield maidens who go around, you know, fighting battles and dispatching brave warriors to Valhalla you know, just by the usual means of their spear arms and their faith in the gods, right? So you specifically have this. It's like a paladin stroke cavalier, right? Someone who has an obligation to take on the biggest and toughest foes and send them to go join the father of the slain in the afterlife so that they can fight at Ragnarok. That's a pretty compelling motivation for a real hard-case paladin. Valkyries appear in a very different role in the sagas, and I'm going to give you one just now. There are probably more examples, but this is the one that leaps to mind when I think about it. Now, this is from a section toward the end of Njal's saga, which deals with the Battle of Clontarf. The Battle of Clontarf was fought in Ireland in 1014, and there were a lot of Vikings involved in it, and so the part of Njal's saga concerns itself with what happened to certain Icelanders during the Battle of Clontarf. So now there's this story about the news of the battle arriving by supernatural means. Again, I'm quoting from Magnusson and Paulsson's translation. On the morning of Good Friday, it happened in Caithness that a man called Durrud went outside and saw 12 riders approach a woman's bower and disappear inside. He walked over to the bower and peered through a window. Inside, he could see women with a loom set up before them. Men's heads were used in place of weights, and men's intestines for the weft and warp. A sword served as the beater, and the shuttle was an arrow. And these were the verses they were chanting. Blood rains from the cloudy web on the broad loom of slaughter. The web of man, gray as armor, is now being woven. The Valkyries will cross it with a crimson weft. The warp is made of human entrails. Human heads are used as weights. The heddle rods are blood-wet spears. The shafts are iron-bound. And arrows are the shuttles. With swords we will weave this web of battle. The Valkyries go weaving with drawn swords. Hild and Hrothrimul, Sangrid and Svipul. Spears will shatter. Shields will splinter. Swords will gnaw like wolves through armor. Let us now wind the web of war which the young king once waged. Let us advance as we wade through the ranks where friends of ours are exchanging blows. Let us now wind the web of war and then follow the king to battle. Gunn and Gondul can see there the blood-spattered shields that guarded the king. Let us now wind the web of war where the warrior banners are forging forward. Let his life not be taken. Only the Valkyries can choose the slain. And then there's more. You know, there's lots. And then the web is now woven and the battlefield reddened. The news of disaster will spread through lands. It is horrible now to look around as a blood-red cloud darkens the sky. The heavens are stained with the blood of men as the Valkyries sing their song. We sang well victory songs for the young king. Hail to our singing. Let him who listens to our Valkyrie song learn it well and tell it to others. Let us ride our horses hard on bare backs with swords unsheathed away from here. So clearly here, these are the Valkyries acting like the Norns, right? Weaving the fates of those who will die or conquer in the battle, or indeed both die and conquer, which is what happens. Because the Brian, the Irish High King, wins the battle, but is killed. And we've seen this before, this idea that the Valkyries are possessors of a supernatural power other than just riding around on a flying horse and clobbering people. Because in Sigurdrifumal, the Valkyrie Sigurdrifa, who is may also be Brunhild, it's basically the same story. When she's woken from her slumber, what she does is teach Sigurd magical runes. So the Valkyries are keepers of magical knowledge, and magical knowledge is often associated with the land of the dead. And I didn't mention this, I mentioned it in the Patron Deities episode, but when Helgi saw the Valkyries, he was sitting on a grave mound. And so there may be this idea that the Valkyries are partly of the land of the dead, right? The choosers of the slain. And so they have some magical knowledge that comes from that. Indeed, Odin says that he finds his secrets speaking to men who dwell in the hollows of the home, which is a nice way of saying graves, that the dead know something that the living don't. And Odin's necromancy is how he has all these secrets. So what are Valkyries? Are they protective warriors? Are they necromancers? Are they just Odin's leg breakers? Are they angels? Are they princesses? And I think the argument is that they can be all those things, right? In theory, you could run a campaign in which every character was a Valkyrie. You would have some who were just the paladins of Odin, right? Mount up the spears, go down and, you know, slay people. You could have some who were some kind of necromancers. You could have some who were, you know, soothsayers and fortune tellers. They all have some connection to the idea of being a Valkyrie. If you wanted Valkyries as an antagonist, it's actually a pretty easy way to have them in your games, because all you have to do is decide that whatever clown the player characters are trying to take out, you know, some real piece of work, Odin has nonetheless decided that this person has to be protected. Only the Valkyries can choose the slain. So Odin has decided that some goof has to be protected, and then you get the bad guy that you're trying to kill, and then you get this person who is protecting him, who is a sympathetic character, right? That's a fun villain, because this person says, you know, well, look, I hate this guy as much as you do. I know what a monster he is, but orders are orders. It's my job to keep him safe. And, you know, what are you going to do? Defy the king of the gods? And the player characters get to have that moment of player character heroism where they go, yeah, damn right, we're going to defy the king of the gods. Have you heard the good news of St. Cuthbert? Or whatever. So player character Valkyries would take a certain amount of work, but I feel like antagonist Valkyries almost write themselves, because the Valkyries live in that ambiguous space between the world of mortals and the world of the gods. Whether they themselves come from the world of mortals and the world of, or the world of the gods doesn't really matter, because where they live is kind of with one foot in each camp. And that makes them really compelling antagonists in the way that, like, a solar isn't, right? If gods send down a solar to kick your butt, chances are you did something wrong, and it's not like you can reason with the thing. It is a pure expression of the divine will, and it's going to come down and put its glowing heavenly foot on your neck, and that's just how it's going to be. You know, it's stand and fight or run. But we know the Valkyries have previous when it comes to going sideways on Odin's orders, so there's a chance that you can talk to them. Also, because they have connections to the mortal world, they could have previous connections to you, right? It could be your mom that's protecting this bad guy, you know, and here's her favorite daughter is coming along to kill him, and it's, you know, now it's going to be a clash of swords between generations, right? Easy peasy. Valkyries also seem to know magical secrets. I mentioned the teaching of runes thing, but when Helgi is talking to Svava, or possibly Sigrun, I can't remember, the first time he sees her, he says... She gives him a name. She names him Helgi, presumably because she sees that he's the reincarnation of the previous Helgi, or maybe it's the other way around. Anyway, she names him, and he says, okay, well, what else do you have to offer me? Whatever deal you offer me, I will only accept it if I get you as part of it. But she says, I know where there are a bunch of magical swords, and one is especially good. Which is a great, you know, again, this idea that swords might have been sacrificed, might have been deposited in, you know, an out-of-the-way place, or buried, or dropped in a bog. And so the idea that because they have entered the land of the dead, the Valkyries somehow know about them. So they might know about buried treasure, which sort of symbolically is in the underworld, right? It's been buried. It's dead. So because it's in the land of the dead, the Valkyries know about its location. So you have a good excuse for an NPC Valkyrie to pretty much know whatever you need them to. So they're great clue givers, but can you trust them? Because obviously, if they're handing out information, it's either to further Odin's sinister designs, which maybe you don't want, because he's a pretty dangerous guy, or it's to thwart Odin's sinister designs, which you maybe also don't want, because you don't want to end up on the wrong side of that guy. But there's no way to tell which is which initially, right? So they're pleasantly ambiguous while also being cool and heroic. I think it's a winner all around. So Valkyries, you know, for just a short entry in the Deities and Demigods book, I think there's a lot more play value in the Valkyrie concept than you would really think. And if you have a game that has got any room at all for a Norse cosmology, I really urge you to include some Valkyries in it. The other good thing about them is that they adapt really well, right? You don't have to have Odin and you don't have to have whatever. Any suitable god can have Valkyries, right? I mean, I don't even remember which D&D setting it's from, but like the Paladins of the Raven Queen are basically Valkyries, right? Well, they certainly got the bird imagery and the association with death. So I don't think it's too much of a stretch to include them in a lot of different settings. And it's a great origin for a superhero. I mean, essentially, that seems to be what they are in some of these poems, right? Is almost kind of superheroic people, and like any good Marvel Comics character, entangled in the problems of their secret identities. Anyway, that's been our special episode on Valkyries. Thank you very much to Jason Connerly for sponsoring it. If you, like Jason, would like to sponsor an episode, you can do so by going to patreon.com/monsterman and subscribing at the $5 or higher level. If you want to subscribe at a lower level, be my guest. At the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to that show I've been mentioning all throughout this episode, Patron Deities. We're just about to start a new chapter of the Deities and Demigods book, so it's a great time to jump on. Plus, Of course, you'll instantly get access to all, at the time of this recording, 14 previous episodes. So thank you once again for listening to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Do you have a favorite monster? Do you have something you'd like me to talk about? Find me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or send me an email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. If you want to support the podcast, you can do so at patreon.com/monsterman, where you'll find lots of extra bonus content and my brand new show, Patron Deities, in which I explore the deities and demigods advanced Dungeons & Dragons book. Check it out. Thanks for listening.